3, 2, 1, woof.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have
to. Did he say woof?
Here's John Williams.
Max Armstrong used to, when he was counting things down, when he was in the studio recording, he'd use woof as go, and so it's good enough for the great Max Armstrong. It's good enough for me. Hi, I'm John Williams. I'm here until 3 o'clock weekdays on Saturdays, 10 a.m. until 12 noon, and on social media. Like me, follow me, love me. I'm WGN King John. We also post to WGNradio.com every day a web poll question. We call it the News Click. We ask you about something in the news. We asked you yesterday about Judge Kavanaugh and the hearing that will take place next Monday. By the way, I don't know if the Kavanaugh hearing on Monday is going to be televised, but there, Dr. Ford and Brett Kavanaugh are going to be testifying, and I don't know if that's going to be on TV. Many of us remember watching Clarence Thomas's back and forth with Anita Hill years ago. This thing is so similar to it, it's just striking. Some of the same senators that are on that committee then are on it now, and I don't know if it's going to be televised or not. But the News Click asked you about that. In fact, Producer Olive, are we ready with the News Click results before we move on to the Van Dyke trial? What was the News Click from yesterday, please?
Should the Senate confirmation hearing of Brett Kavanaugh be delayed until assault allegations are investigated? A. Yes. We need as much information about him as possible. 80%.
Delay it, says 80%. No, what he might have done in high school is not relevant, said 11%, and I don't even believe the accusation, said 7%. But 8 out of 10 said, yeah, let's at least slow this thing down. That's the shame of it all. I mean, I don't know how thoroughly we need to investigate this, because maybe you don't believe that it matters that much, what somebody did in high school years ago, but this thing's... this letter, this accusation has surfaced so late in the process that now it all of a sudden seems rushed. We're asking you if they should slow it down and get as much information as possible, and 8 out of 10 said yes. And the News Click, the new News Click might be about the Bears. I think the new News Click should be about those Chicago Bears. Like, A, I think they're going to be in the Super Bowl. B, I think they're going to make the playoffs. And C, they're not going to do any of the above. But that's kind of a fun football game to watch last night. You got to admit that. Our Eric Rung has been at the courthouse. He's not on the phone yet, is he, Olive? Okay, we're still waiting to connect with Eric. You know, here's what I want to do. I want to do a GoFundMe page and buy tasers for everybody in the Chicago Police Department. Does anybody know how much a taser costs? And do the cops all have tasers now? Because obviously 4 years ago they did not. I mean, we are not standing here today talking about Jason Van Dyke and Laquan McDonald if all of the police officers have tasers. What was there? Half a dozen squad cars there, and they were all waiting for somebody to bring a taser. If they'd had a taser, then I guess they would have approached him. They could have subdued him with the taser gun, and then they would not have had to use lethal force. So the officers have their guns drawn, and they all the firepower in the world, but we don't have a taser. I know some people carry it around in their purse. The cops did not have a taser. So let's just do a GoFundMe page and make sure they all have that as an alternative. It's interesting to see how the two sides have been playing their case. We've all been listening or following it. Maybe you've been watching it online, watching it on CLTV, listening to it at WGNradio.com, or following it in the press. We'll play a few sound bites for you in just a couple of minutes. Our Eric Rung was in the courthouse this morning. They're on lunch break now. Eric, you're on WGN. How are you?
Good afternoon. Yeah, we actually just got back underway after the lunch break. An evidence tech is just beginning his testimony here this afternoon.
I'll let you get back in there. Just give me a minute of your time. What stood out?
Absolutely.
What stood out in the morning?
Well, by far, it was Joe Walsh, who was Jason Van Dyke's partner the night that Laquan McDonald was shot and killed 4 years ago. He was on the stand for most, a good portion of the morning anyway, answering a lot of questions. Basically, the prosecution had asked him several times in the 30 seconds that you had an interaction from the moment you showed up to the scene there with Laquan McDonald to the moment Jason Van Dyke shot and killed him. Did he make any threatening gestures toward any pedestrians or anyone of the public near that Burger King or near the Dunkin' Donuts, anybody that happened to be walking along Pulaski that night? And he said no. Did you ever see him raise his knife in a threatening manner? Joe Walsh said that he did see him raise the knife over his waist and turn toward both him and Jason Van Dyke, and that is when he believes that Van Dyke fired the first of what we now know 16 shots that killed Laquan McDonald. The defense came up and asked him about that. And he, in a very dramatic fashion, got up from behind or outside of the witness box there, went in front of the jury, and explained exactly from his perspective what he saw that night, what him and Jason Van Dyke saw that night. He walked as if McDonald was walking down the middle of the street, the video that we know so well now. And he raised his arm about shoulder height. That was the right arm, the arm that Laquan had the knife in. And then he kind of turned his shoulders toward the jury, which in his perspective would have been toward him and Jason Van Dyke. And he said that is when Officer Van Dyke then fired the first of 16 shots. The prosecution then got back up and said, well, why don't we see that on the videotape? Why doesn't the videotape show him turning his shoulders toward you? He said, well, that's not my perspective. That's not what I saw. You're seeing this from behind. This isn't, he's not parallel to you, like you see in the video where you're seeing everything happen from behind him. So that was very interesting. The other thing that was very interesting as well is they had an eyewitness to the shooting who happened to be on Pulaski that night, was pulled over on the side of the road. And he very specifically said Laquan McDonald did not make any threatening gestures toward the officers and, in fact, was walking away from the officers when he was shot and killed. Those were two very interesting points that were taken away here today. The defense really trying to hammer that, you know, this guy was a danger. He had punctured a police car tire. He was heading toward a Burger King where there were a lot of people. He was heading towards a Dunkin' Donuts where there were a lot of people. In fact, at one point, the defense asked Van Dyke's witness, somebody had to stop this guy, right? And Joe Walsh said yes.
Yeah, it's been interesting to listen to. I appreciate your reporting on this, and it is that, isn't it? We've all seen the video, and even as you imagine the scene as it's played out in the courtroom, you can draw two different conclusions, or at least paint two different pictures of what happened. And so Van Dyke's defense is painting McDonald as this sort of menacing guy who at any moment could continue the quote-unquote rampage he was on and go after somebody and attack the McDonald's or the Dunkin' Donut, which, as I understand it, was a block away, but you get the point. This is how they're going to try and defend Van Dyke. And
yeah, and maybe it wasn't part of the defense here. It maybe wasn't Van Dyke's life that was in jeopardy, but it's his job to protect the public as well. Their lives were in jeopardy. That's what they're trying to at least put in the jury's mind as far as I see the questioning going.
You know what I would do too, Eric? They never ask for my advice on these things, but the prosecution keeps hammering home the 16 shots, dramatically counting them out in the opening testimony. And as I understand it, it is the first shot that matters. The first shot is the one that matters. And if he has a right to fire the first shot, then he has the right to fire the subsequent shot. So if I'm Van Dyke's defense, I'm just saying, listen, it's awful, right? None of us wishes any of this had happened, but let's not let the totality of shots sway you. The first shot is what matters. And if he felt like he had to fire the first shot, and he's going to make that case, then he has the right to fire the subsequent ones. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, absolutely. And the prosecution, I think, was trying to draw some distinction between that when they were talking with his partner, who is now a former police officer, who's also facing charges of misconduct and obstruction of justice. But we can go off on that tangent in a moment. But they also asked him, would you have fired your weapon if you thought your partner, Van Dyke, life was in jeopardy? And he said yes. But see, he didn't fire a shot. He did have his gun drawn, but he didn't fire a shot. In fact, he took a step back when Laquan McDonald was in the street, while his partner, Van Dyke, took a step forward. And that was, I think, an important distinction as well, that the prosecution really wanted the jury to see here today.
One last thing for me, Eric, then I'll let you get back in there. I've been educated the last few days, but I'm surprised that maybe the 36 hours prior to Laquan's being shot, the defense is able to offer testimony about what Laquan was doing, what his days were like, high on PCP, riding the trains endlessly, trying to carjack somebody, etc. I know those are all terrible, bad things, but Van Dyke did not know any of that when he pulls up. So how is that, you know, some sort of defense, since Van Dyke himself was unaware of it? But I guess you can.
And the prosecution brings that up all the time too. Is that you? Every witness that they've questioned so far, they said, "Did you know he was? Did you know he was on PCP? Did you know that this had happened? Did you know this had happened?" And they all say no, because in fact they don't know. But all the defense, of course, has to do is just put a reasonable doubt in that jury's mind. That's what they're aiming to do. And you know, it looks like shaping up their case here is that they're saying that the public was definitely in danger from this dangerous man that was running down the street wild with a knife. That's how they kind of describe it, that he was attacking police cars, could have ran into a Burger King, could have ran into a Dunkin' Donuts, and somebody had to stop this guy. That's what the defense is saying here. And of course, if they bring in all that other stuff that happened prior to, well, then they start building a picture of a person that that the jury possibly could believe is capable of this and is capable of running into a Burger King and or Dunkin' Donuts and stabbing innocent people that happen to be in there at that point. And you can kind of see their case is kind of building in that direction, at least from the first couple of days of testimony.
Right, and if you're trying to build the case that Laquan was this dangerous person, this wildly out of control, rampaging person, while the video does not support that, maybe it was brilliant on Van Dyke's defense's part to now, I mean, we don't need a reenactment of it, we've just seen it. But to ask the officer to get down and then turn and look over his shoulder at the jury, who knows what facial expression he offered, but if that looked more menacing in real life than the video does on the screen, then maybe it's smart to do that, because you're right, if they can convince them that he was in imminent danger or threat, and that recreation, however unnecessary, might have been that, then maybe that's enough to plant the seed in one or more of the jurors' minds.
We will see. That is for sure. And I will also say this about this jury. I've sat in on a lot of high-profile cases in my career, and it's always interesting to watch the jury, especially when you see testimony like that, when you hear about the prosecution in their opening, you know, being very dramatic. I mean, this is not to make it light here, but this is in fact a little bit of theater.
Oh, absolutely,
here.
Absolutely.
And when you watch good attorneys, you can see an impact on the jurors' faces. And I've been watching them as some of the witnesses have been giving their testimony and some of the pointed questions. When frustration, you can see that on the prosecution's or the defense attorney's faces or even on the witnesses' faces. I'll take a look at the jury to see how they react, too. For the most part, they remain pretty stoic. They don't show a lot of emotion or reaction to what's happening in court, but they are definitely paying attention. A number of them are taking page after page after page of notes on these witnesses. And then there's a couple that I don't think they opened their notebook once while I was in there this morning. So that's kind of interesting to see how that plays out. And, of course, you know, these people are going to be with each other now for a couple of weeks. You know, you can kind of see every once in a while during breaks they'll kind of maybe look at one another and kind of give a smile. I mean, eventually these people are going to be locked in a room. Well, not locked, but you know what I mean. They're going to be put in a room. You know, they're going to form relationships, and then that's when this deliberation is really going to take place, and they're going to go over their notes. One person will say, well, I heard it this way, I heard it this way, and that's how this deliberation is going to go, and it's just interesting to see how jurors react during this trial,
especially.
We're only on day two here, and I have a feeling, and in my experience, the note-taking gets a lot less the longer the trial
goes.
Yeah,
sure, I can imagine. Not to make light of it, but any of us in a classroom figure out a professor's delivery style, and then we maybe take fewer notes after we start to get the feel for the room. Eric Rung from WGN Radio is at the courthouse, and you pop back in there. We'll listen later on, but thanks for your reporting and time this afternoon, Eric.
Absolutely. No problem. Take care.
You bet. It's 1:24. I said, can we get a GoFundMe page to get enough tasers to the Chicago Police Department? Your texts and this story that Elif just flagged for me are interesting about that in a minute. Can we get some tasers in the room? And last August, the Chicago Tribune reported that the police department here plans to own as many as 6,900 tasers by the end of 2017. So here we are now halfway through 2018, but at least by the beginning of this year, they were to have a nine-fold increase from what they had the year that Laquan McDonald was shot. So they knew they needed more. Now, this doesn't say that every one of them will have it, but that was just my point a moment ago. We may not be standing here today if the police, the night that Laquan was shot, had tasers. That's why they were following this guy. That's why they weren't doing anything. They were waiting for a squad car to arrive with a taser. Your texts include these from 630 John. They did not have to shoot him, period. Tasers or not. 262 said, John, tasers cost $800 each plus cartridges to deploy the prongs. From 773, John, tasers do not work or rarely work on people that have drugs in their body, especially PCP. Further, sometimes they don't even work on people like you and me, assuming either of us have any. Okay, so thank you for that. I don't know all of the details, but hopefully the cops have more of those at their disposal. We'll finish this conversation after the news. We'll move on to the Brett Kavanaugh hearings. I guess they're also now going to be two people talking to the Senate Judiciary Committee on Monday. We'll talk a little bit about that. We'll talk about the Bears game before we get done today and the Queen of Hearts drawing, which is taking place in McHenry County. Violetta sent me, or did you post that online, V, the video overhead of what's happening?
Yeah, I posted it on Facebook, and I was thinking you can reshare it with all your fans, but...
What did you post?
It's a video. WGN TV was overhead, and everyone's covering this because it's up to $7 million, and the lines are outrageous.
Has anybody said what the odds are? Because the more people that get in this, you know, thousands and thousands of people, you go, it's a local raffle. It's just at the VFW, $7 million. I got a crack at that. But there's so many people in it now that your chances are not. I wonder how good your chances are. I wonder how, not as good as they were the first week. That's for sure. Elif's looking at me like, hey, you got to take a break. How about that Dow, huh? How about these markets?
Yeah, leaked just shot up 26.3.
We're at 246.
It was up about 160 when I was doing the biz lunch an hour ago.
I wish I had $1 million in 2009. Because I'd be looking, right. I wouldn't be here right now if I had $1 million in 2009. But I would have put it all in the market and then boom, 243. 244. And, you know, it's funny because I've just, you know, I've been reading that book Fear by Bob Woodward. And so I said yesterday, and it's, I'm like 20 pages from the finish of the book now. But if you said, what are the central themes of this book Fear by Bob Woodward about the Trump presidency? I'd say one of the main ones is trying to persuade the president how trade works and how tariffs work. And they spend a lot of time talking about what happens if you put up trade barriers or tariffs on Chinese goods coming into this country. They'll retaliate, which is exactly what's happening today. And there's his economic team saying, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. If you'd always hoped that there were adults in the Trump room, know that there is. Some of them, people you may have formed a negative opinion about, trust me, they're doing God's work in there. It's just not easy to do. And so here's the president coming out saying, okay, China, that's it. Here's $200 billion. Boom, he slaps it on them. And the markets go up. So maybe, so I don't know what the end of that sentence is. I don't know what the logic is or the how all of this works. But I guess that's good for us that the Dow is going up. Up 247. It was 244 just seconds ago, Steve. I could do play-by-play for you if you'd like.
No, I think we get the idea.
Now it's the 248, Steve.
That would be the play-by-play
we're talking about. Yeah, mm-hmm.
Dollar by dollar.
Hey, finish that thought, Steve.
I was just going to say dower by dower, which I'm sorry you asked.
Yeah. Just real quick here, we'll sort of spend just another minute or so in the next hour on what's happening in McHenry County. What's the town where they're having this Queen of Hearts drawing?
I don't have...
I keep saying it's the McHenry County VFW.
Well, it might be in McHenry County. I'm not sure. I mean, it might be in the town of McHenry.
McHenry, yeah.
I'll see if I can find out. I'm not going to win it, so frankly, I haven't been looking at it. McHenry VFW raffle.
Yeah. So it's over $7 million. So I said, what are the chances that you're going to win compared to, say, the chances that you'd... you know, win the lottery where you get millions of dollars. And I guess they're better, but, you know, with so many people in it, they can't be very good. So I said, Violetta, did you know what the odds are? And so she finds this, yeah, McHenry, Illinois, at the VFW Queen of Hearts raffle. 2.8 million tickets were sold for Tuesday's raffle. So your chances are 1 and 2.8 times, I think, 8, because there's still 8 cards left. Not to get into this, but if yours is drawn, you don't win. You have a 1 and 2.8 million chance that they'll pull your ticket out. But then you have a 1 and 8 chance, say, that you'll pick the right card that remains on the wall.
And that was as of 9:30 in the morning. Tickets are still being sold.
There's a long line out the door. If they don't get a winner in tonight's drawing, then they'll do it again and again and again until they do. So your odds are winning not good. Your chances are better that you'll be struck by lightning. You have a 1 in 700,000 chance of being struck by lightning. Your chances of winning an Oscar are 1 in 11,500. When they do these statistics, they don't know what the heck they're talking about. Your chances of winning an Oscar are not 1 in 11,500. That is so stupid. I mean, maybe if you're a Screen Actors Guild member and you've ever been in a movie and then you take all those people and divide by the number of awards handed out, that's fine. But they're not randomly handing out Oscars.
Well, maybe it means relative to your...
This offers no understanding of the chances. Winning an Oscar, 1 in 11,000. But that's stupid. I'm not going to repeat that. Winning an Olympic gold medal, 1 in 662,000. And finally, just to show you how unlikely it is, it says here 1 in 2.8 million. You have a 1 in 2.4 million, a better chance of dying from being left-handed and using a right-handed product improperly. I don't know what that means.
That is always a chance.
What does that even mean?
Well, they say...
scissors or something? What, you have something that's designed for the one hand, you're using the other.
Think about, you know, one of those really big saws.
Right, I guess. Although it seems to me like those work both ways. But whatever the heck that means, your chances are not good of winning tonight. We'll see how that goes a little later on. This just in. Is this about the Laquan McDonald thing? Is it interesting and ironic that Chicago media has the same side photo of the shot at Grand Stadium? Yeah, Eric Rung is at the courthouse. We're following, of course, the Jason Van Dyke trial today. Laquan McDonald shot 4 years ago. These attorneys have had, in a way, 4 years to process this information, think about it, and then try and find a way to present their case. In the case of Van Dyke's team, that burden, I think, is significant. How do you persuade people, having seen that video, and the jurors have, how do you persuade them that Van Dyke did need to fire his weapon? The prosecution offers this, and then we'll let the defense have their turn. But the prosecution, Joseph McMahon, the prosecutor, says this about Laquan McDonald.
What he did know. What he did see was a black boy walking down the street on Pulaski towards a chain link fence and having the audacity to ignore the police.
They count out the shots 16 times, and when they do it in court, it takes them almost a minute. Actually, they were fired in a matter of 6 seconds. But it's very dramatic to hear one, two. When he gets to eight, he says he's only halfway done, and then keeps shooting. The way they describe it in the courtroom makes it sound like it was this long, drawn-out, conscious process. I think it was more of a reaction, a bad one, a wrong one, the one for which he should go to jail. But remember, the 16 shots were fired in 6 seconds. They describe it as something that took almost a minute to do. Very dramatic and permissible, of course. This is cut three, Aleph. This is the... defense attorney, Van Dyke's attorney, Dan Herbert.
The 24 hours leading up to the final chapter here, directed by Laquan McDonald, shows the story of a out of control individual who didn't care about anyone, not citizens, not armed police officers, and not himself. Laquan McDonald was on a wild rampage through the city.
You know, it's sort of like when President Trump says something and you say, gee, that's not the way I understand it. That's not what happened, or that's your view of it, but really? But I guess you get to, if you're trying to defend Jason Van Dyke, you get to say whatever you want. And in fact, that's relatively true. I mean, he's characterizing it as a wild rampage. You and I are judging Laquan on what we saw in that short video of him walking down the street. And I would never describe that as a wild rampage. But if you say, well, what did he do the 24 or 48 hours beforehand? You would say there was a lot of illegal activity there. Van Dyke did not know that. But that's the quote-unquote wild rampage that the defense is describing. The column that I think it was Mary Mitchell. No, I think it was somebody else in the Chicago Sun-Times today said, I'm glad I'm not a juror in this case. I'm glad I'm not a juror in this case. I suppose we all would agree with that. And then you've got, on Monday, the Kavanaugh hearing, which is coming up. And I don't know how that one is going to go either. I suppose, Steve, do you know the answer to this question? Is the Kavanaugh Monday hearing going to be on TV? They say it's going to be, quote-unquote, public.
Well,
but will that be televised?
Oh, it would, if it's public, it will be televised. Are you kidding me? The Senate Republicans were saying about 40 minutes ago that they're going to offer the professor a chance to testify privately, which is interesting to me because, I mean, that's would be right up Kavanaugh's alley. I mean, he's better off the less publicity this gets. I mean, so they're not really doing her a great favor unless she doesn't want to do it publicly and she would prefer private. So we'll see exactly where that goes. I don't know if they were, you know, trying to push it to make it a behind-closed-doors meeting. It seemed to me that yesterday the agreement was it would be an open hearing.
64 women have come forward and signed a letter who know Kavanaugh from school, from six different schools when he was a kid, and all of them have said he's an upstanding person. This is not the Brett Kavanaugh they know. They think he should be confirmed. They're shocked and stunned that somebody would accuse him of this or that he would be guilty of this. They say this is not our Brett Kavanaugh. He denies it, says that he was not at the party that night, and the other guy, who she says was in the room, is also saying that this is not true. And then this is what happens. So that other guy, his last name, ironically, is Judge, and he said, no, that's not what happened either. So now, what do? They look into that guy. This is what happens. They look into that guy. Turns out he's written a book. And in the book, he describes the wild escapades of high school teenagers at that school. He even describes the activities of one character named Kavanaugh. Is it the same Kavanaugh? We don't know. But boy, they said that that school was flowing in alcohol, he says, and that the behavior was crazy at times. And then you weigh that against the friends of Kavanaugh who say that this is not the guy that we knew. To me, one thing that is really hard to dispel is why would she come up with, this is what I said about Anita Hill, why would this woman invite the ridicule and the scrutiny if there wasn't some truth to it? Is it credible that something like this happened a few decades ago? Absolutely. And does she have much motive to bring it up? I don't know, except maybe it was the truth. To me, the biggest problem here is not what did or didn't happen. I mean, if it happened, that's terrible. But some people might conclude that if that happened 3 decades later, he should still be able to sit on the Supreme Court. The thing that worries me the most is not that quote-unquote youthful indiscretion. It's the fact that he might be lying about it as an adult today. That's what you can't have on a Supreme Court justice. And now we're all going to sit there and watch TV and try and figure it out. Anita Hill has a piece in the Washington Post today. She's been to this movie before, and it's very interesting. It's just her sort of first-person narrative, and she said that the world is a different place now and that this deserves a fair hearing. She doesn't take sides per se. She's not saying whether or not it happened. But she said that it does not have to be political. We can have this hearing and hear this woman out without having to draw Democrat or Republican sides. That's mostly what she's hoping for. Okay, we'll see how that goes. Hey, Joe, real quick, jump in here. We were talking about that Kavanaugh thing. What did you want to say? You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Dan. On the Kavanaugh, just, I think, to go back like 40 years plus or minus at this point, and I know it's not the first time, but I think that's poor investigating on who's ever doing it, FBI or whoever's checking his P's and Q's. That's saying, you know, if he did wrong, he did wrong. If he didn't, he didn't. If the woman is... if the woman is wrong, sorry about that.
But, I'm sorry. Wait a minute. Hold on. You're saying it happened so long ago that there's no point in bringing it up now? Is that what you're saying?
No, not really. If he had a record of some sort, you know, bank robbers, another, and he raped somebody, this, that, and the other. If he had a trail behind him, okay, then I could see making something out of this. But if that's the only mark they could find against him, then I think they should have done that behind closed doors. Just an opinion.
Yeah. Thanks for the phone call. I don't know that we need to know all of this as long as the people deciding know this, right? So if it's done behind closed doors, but the Senate Judiciary Committee has that information and the full Senate has that information, of course, if he didn't pass, they'd say, why in the world didn't you guys? And then they'd have to say, well, we found out something. So ultimately, I guess we would find out. It just beeped 2 o'clock. This is WGN Radio.
Thinking big thoughts. So you don't have to.
That's what we do.
Here's John Williams.
All the way till 3. Saturdays, 10 a.m. till 12 noon. Remember, The Mincing Rascals was judged the best podcast in Chicago.
Lord have mercy.
And that's the one we do here at WGN, featuring Steve Bertrand, friends of ours from the Chicago Tribune, and me, John Williams. If you like podcasts, make sure you listen to The Mincing Rascals. One other plug for Team WGN Radio here. Teddy Roosevelt and I are on a stage at Elgin Community College's Blizzard Theater. We should hand out blizzards. I love the name of that theater, the Blizzard Theater. I don't know why it's called that, but that's the name of the theater at Elgin's College. And we did a show there before. Teddy Roosevelt and I will be on stage the Saturday after the election. And this will be a great conversation where we bring back one of these characters to life. And when he bursts onto the stage, I promise you, you will believe that's Teddy Roosevelt. We'll talk about leadership. And we'll talk about it from what happened when Roosevelt was president 100 years ago to what could and should happen today. These are fun, funny, exhilarating performances. They're unscripted conversations, and you get to ask questions, too. Have you been to one of these? The Roosevelt shows are the funnest. The Roosevelt shows are the funnest. Go to WGNradio.com/events, sponsored in part by American Sale. There's one thing, Steve, that you were mentioning that I wanted to bring up. You know, the president was talking just moments ago. We listened to it live in the news. He's there with the president of Poland.
Yes.
So they're asking questions, and obviously this Kavanaugh hearing comes up. And he said, you know, he just seems, he's such a good guy. He's one of the best people. His wife is terrific. His daughters are terrific. The president doesn't know these people that well, but you know, I was Kavanaugh's biggest fan after we first were introduced to him.
Oh,
when
I remember
president
that.
Nominated him.
That's right.
I mean, here's just a clip. This is Kavanaugh speaking after the president is standing next to him. He's just been introduced as the president's nominee for the Supreme Court, and he says things like this.
My dad went to law school at night while working full time. He has an unparalleled work ethic and has passed down to me his passion for playing and watching sports. I love him dearly.
Didn't talk a lot about his dad. He talked a lot about his mom, and he talked about his daughters.
I have tried to create bonds with my daughters like my dad created with me. For the past 7 years, I have coached my daughters' basketball teams. The girls on the team call me Coach K. I am proud of our Blessed Sacrament team that just won the city championship.
You know, that's some of the personal stuff. You just kind of get a feel for his humor and his family, and that was nice. But he talked, too, about the rule of law and, you know, a little bit about his career and some of his judicial philosophies. He didn't drill down too much. You wouldn't expect it there. But he just seems so likable, so square. You know, I said then that elections have consequences. If you elect a conservative president, you get a conservative justice, and better that they be intelligent and fair than they necessarily have your political stripe. I was all in. And now I have it to weigh that against this, these charges against him. And I don't know how to do that. But my default, I guess we all have where we go on these things, is to the woman. I believed Anita Hill, and now I believe this other woman, not knowing any more about it than you do. I've been clicking around, I've been doing my due diligence, but really, how much do any of us know about these people?
But can a square person who have made a mistake before, or a guy that you like in high school or when he was a teenager did something he could have regretted and didn't follow through on, but regretted his actions anyway?
This is weird, but if I said, yes, okay, so that happened, and now you're a different person, I can get my head around that. But I don't want you lying about it today. I mean, if nothing else, his sin today will be, if it happened, we don't know. But if it did happen, we can't put on the Supreme Court a guy that's going to sit there and lie to you out of convenience. So did it happen or not? We just don't know. It's a he said, she said, or they said, she said. There was two men in that room, and her, and she said this is what happened, and they said no, it categorically did not. John, sad to even think this, but those 65 women who signed that letter saying they support him, that went to school or schools with him, those elite high school prep college women, I wonder if any of them are Republicans. I don't know. Is that where the head goes on this one? John, I have a hard time trusting politicians these days. They'll say whatever they have to say to keep a seat. John, why would she make that story up, you ask? Well, she's a staunch liberal, money, fame, and his mother presided over a foreclosure case that her parents lost. I read about that this morning, didn't exactly understand that. But my understanding is also that she spoke to a therapist, and those notes exist. I don't know who's offering those up. You'd think that would be sort of, you know, unavailable to us. But she worked some of this out with a therapist prior to that case that her parents oversaw. I mean, if you believe that it happened and she spoke to a therapist about it, then down the road, there's this intersection, weirdly, between both of their parents. I don't know what to make of all of that. John, her students say they think that she may have mental problems. Well, there's a few easy reasons for you. John, something this traumatic happened to this woman and she does not remember where and when exactly it happened, that's not credible. John, how long do you try to use something that may have happened when a teenager who has since had time to establish himself as an outstanding jurist? I don't know how people answer that question. That's the question Violetta poses. What if it did happen? Do you say, okay, but now you're a completely different person, and we'll still put you on the Supreme Court? These are the questions that we're all trying to decipher here. Lots of questions and comments, too, about the Jason Van Dyke trial, which is going on, and that we've been following here on WGN. John, if Laquan McDonald stops and drops the knife, he is alive today. I continue to be confused by this, said someone from 847. And also from 847, hey, John, the totality of shots speak to Van Dyke's state of mind. It was animalistic brutality. And boy, there's no easy judgment on this one either. I guess the fair thing, the best thing to say in both of these cases is let's let the process out. Let's not judge too quickly. Difficult to do, isn't it? Dwayne Lundgren's on a phone line. Dwayne is the VFW Post 4600 commander in McHenry. Hey, Dwayne, it's John Williams. You're on WGN Radio. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Glad to be on the show.
I know what you're glad about, Dwayne. You know what you're glad about?
I'm glad that we'll have a winner tonight.
How long has this been going on in McHenry?
Well, the inception of the game itself for us at our level here, it began in April of 2016. But the current round, the second round here where this jackpot's been involved with, started in November of 2016.
November of 2017. Now, almost to November. So this has been going on almost 2 years.
Yeah, Yep, uh-huh. Almost threw all 54 cards each time.
Yeah, but how does that happen? That's but a year is 52 weeks. How are you able to close in on 2 years? Because I would have thought you would have exercised every option by now.
Well, one of the stipulations that we have on our rules is that on the first go-around on this current round was that if the second joker on the 54 cards that were on the board, if the second joker was to be revealed, that it would reset the board,
The
jackpot would stay the same, and then a whole new 54 cards would start up again.
Okay, without going into all of the details, This is the Queen of Hearts raffle, and if you don't know how these things work, trust me, it's each week they have a drawing. And if your name is drawn, then you get to turn over one of the cards on a board. And if it's the Queen of Hearts, you win the money in there. So it's been going on almost 2 years. And the jackpot is how much as of right now?
$7,080,528 right now.
How many tickets are in the bucket?
Currently, right now, we started the current day. We started with the previous this current week sales. We already had 1.9 million tickets in the bucket. 1.9 million tickets in the bucket already.
1.9 million. Literally, so you guys have physically handled a couple million tickets this week?
Yes. Yes, we have. All of our volunteers putting them together, ripping them, and selling them out to customers, to players. Yes, we have.
So how does the kitty get divided then after a winner tonight?
Well, again, 60% will go to the winner. So the winner will receive after taxes $2.8 million. And then the other 20%, the other 40% is split up between 20% going to our post here for various programs and building improvements. And then the other 20% will go into the next jackpot, which begins in January sometime.
So you're going to have a version of this headache all over because you'll be at a million to start the next one, right?
Well, currently right now, what happens is all the weeks, this week's sales, which would be, we're estimating between $1.7 and $1.8 million, if not more, will also go into the next jackpot, added on to the 1.4, which is the 20%. So we're looking at definitely probably a $3 million jackpot starting up in January once again.
So you, how much money will you have then for the repairs at the VFW? That's why this thing got started. How much money will you have to actually put into the place?
Well, $1.4 million will go back towards us so that we can do improvements, amenities for the building. We're going to do a beer garden, parking lot, and again, to help various programs for veterans. And I always want to make sure I stress that.
Ferris wheel, heliport, sky deck. I mean, this is going to be the nicest VFW in the earth. And actually, though, isn't it nice to know that, you will have money to, I guess, have you thought about that? How would you make that available to veterans in your area? What would you do?
Well, we want to, first of all, do it smartly. So once we're done, then we're going to let the dust settle. Then we can sit down and be wise about it. And a lot of veterans programs are long-term. With our veterans, it's not a one-time fix for a lot of our veterans. So we want to make sure we spend it wisely with the various charities that we donate to.
Yeah, no kidding. Oh, so you guys will hand it out to other charities that may have programs or services for veterans,
yes.
Huh?
Yes, we do. We don't just have programs within our own walls here, but we also assist other programs, TLS, the Transitional Living Services, right here in McHenry. We will also help our National Home for Children in Eaton Rapids, Michigan, the VFW runs. So we do have various programs that we're able to assist as well.
VFW in Manuka, Illinois, had a scholarship when I was a kid there. Do you guys have a scholarship you fund?
Yes, we do. We do have a Peter Baker Fund, a scholarship fund that we do give out to students who are their parents or members of their families or veterans. Yes, we do.
Hey, listen, I'm going to let you go. I can hear that phone ringing and the buzz in the background. When do you shut off sales today?
Sales will cut off at 7 p.m. today, so that way we can get set up for the drawing at 8 p.m.
There will be a drawing. If you don't have it on the first, you'll keep drawing. How many tickets or cards are left? How many people could you cycle through?
There's seven cards left, so we're going to do it a maximum of seven draws.
All right. Anything else you want to say now that your 15 minutes are almost up?
Well, I'm going to be able to relax again for a little bit. At least for 3 months, I'll be able to relax. But then it starts all over again.
Dwayne, what a nice guy you sound like, and you folks have done a real nice job up there. We've heard about the volunteer effort, and isn't it nice to know that while this has been kind of a happy headache for you, the money's going to a good place. It's going to be over tonight. Congratulations to you guys.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate it, and we're trying to keep this positive, and also it spotlights not just our VFW, but all VFWs across the country.
Dwayne Lundgren is the VFW Post 4600 commander. Get back to that ring and phone, Dwayne.
I certainly will. Sorry about that. Have a great day.
Hey, it's my pleasure. We're the one interrupting you, but what a nice guy and what a good bunch of stuff they're doing over there. Isn't it nice to hear a telephone ringing like that? When's the last time you heard a... You can just see the VFW with a corded phone with a good old-fashioned ringer going on and them doing the good work there. By the way, the Red Line series, are you going to join us, Steve? Will you be over at Friday for the White Sox-Cubs game?
Biz Lunch from there, yep.
Sponsored by Goose Island. If you want to see a difficult radio show to do, watch Steve do a business hour inside Cork and Kerry with a bunch of White Sox fans drinking!
No problem.
We're going to be at Cork and Kerry again. We had a hoot at the beginning of the season. We're going to have fun on Friday. We'll start in the morning and go all the way up until pregame coverage at 2:30, and then you'll hear the first pitch, all on WGN Radio. We'll start at 6 a.m. It's sponsored by Goose Island Brewing Company. That's Goose Island Beer Company and Virtue Cider, and we hope that you can join us for that. I wanted to read you something that I thought was just kind of interesting. This is on page 280 of Bob Woodward's book, Fear. And again, one of the things that is also just most interesting to me about this book, as much as people are saying, oh, this book is crazy, the name is Fear. When I've been posting about it, I've been posting pictures of me with a fearful look on my face. But there's nothing in this book that, to me, is surprisingly new, right? Like, you assume that Donald Trump vacillates from one decision point to another. He's back and forth, and he has no attention span. He doesn't like to read about the most important things in the world, literally. He has to make decisions. He will not read a 10-page memo about it, or even a 3-page memo. And if they talk to him about it for half an hour, they have to get his attention right now, or he's gone. That's just the guy we elected president. But you kind of knew all of that anyway. So as the scenes that he describes in the book are very, very interesting, I won't say that any of it is revelatory. It more confirms what we thought we knew. And it's not him just always citing unnamed sources. I mean, my goodness, he mentions by name time and again cabinet secretaries and his staff secretary, that Rob Porter guy that finally had to leave because he may have abused previous girlfriends that dated Hope Hicks. He is the hero of this book. That is stunning.
Now, is that the job, I don't mean to derail you here, that Brett Kavanaugh had in the Bush White House?
Was Brett Kavanaugh the staff secretary to George Bush?
I have a feeling he was.
Elif, look that up. Was Brett Kavanaugh, she's checking on that right now. I suppose so. I mean, you want a very smart, detail-oriented person, and clearly Kavanaugh was that when he was advising, say, Ken Starr. I mean, he's a scholar, and he's of that political stripe, so I guess that would fit. I won't be surprised to hear that. But this Rob Porter guy, who you may or may have not have already, conjured up an opinion about, is constantly in Trump's ear saying, hey, but what about this? Well, what about that? He's the one, they said that they were stealing papers off his desk before the president would sign him and know that he's distracted easily enough that he'll actually forget about it. It was Rob Porter who was frequently swiping stuff off of Trump's desk. And he was as close to Donald Trump as anybody. I mean, Hope Hicks was very, very close to Donald Trump. This Porter guy was his bud. On September 19th, 2017, President Trump gave his first address to the United Nations General Assembly. For the first time, he dubbed the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un Rocket Man. He said the United States, if forced to defend itself, will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea. Kim fired back 3 days later. A frightened dog barks louder, and said that Trump is, quote, surely a rogue and a gangster fond of playing with fire. I will surely and definitely tame the mentally deranged U.S. dotard. That's when we first ran into that word. So, in a tweet a couple of days later, September 23rd, Trump then called Kim Little Rocket Man. Trump and Rob Porter were together in the president's front cabin on Air Force One, Fox News, was on the TV. Little Rocket Man, Trump said proudly. I think that may have been my best ever, best nickname ever. It is funny, Porter said, and it certainly seems to have gotten under Kim's skin. But he asked, what's the end game here? If we continue to amp up the rhetoric and get into a war of words and it escalates, what are you hoping to get out of this? How does this end? Trump replied, you can never show weakness. You've got to project strength. Kim and others need to be convinced that I'm prepared to do anything to back up your and our interests. Yes, you want to keep him on his toes, Porter said, and you want some air of unpredictability from you, but he seems pretty unpredictable, and we're not sure, is he even well? Is he all mentally there? He doesn't have the same political constraints that other people do. He seems very much to want to be taken seriously on the international stage. The president repeated, you've got to show strength. I wonder, Porter plowed on, if embarrassing him is more likely to sort of get him into submission, or if it could also provoke him. I'm reading this and I'm going, yes, yes, this is what we've all been saying. Somebody needs to tell Trump that. Rob Porter has been telling Trump this stuff. Of course, Porter's gone now. Trump did not respond when Porter said that. His body language suggested that he knew Kim was capable of anything. And then he offered his conclusion. It was a contest of wills, the president said. This is all about leader versus leader, man versus man, me versus Kim, said the president on Air Force One. She just handed me this records on Brett Kavanaugh. He was the staff secretary under the administration of George Bush. So he was that to that. Yeah. Touche, Steve Bertrand. Well,
it's
done.
Interesting that it's a position many of us didn't know anything about until Porter lost his job. And now we've got two central figures there.
In this story, Porter's about 39 years old. He does not have this sort of large politics experience, right? Like, he's not at the level that a Secretary of Defense or State would be, or a National Security Advisor or something like that. He's this kid who's played it right, is smart and competent, but because there's so much infighting, sometimes they'll say, all right, Rob, you do it. Then you figure out the Middle East or North Korea. And so there he is now chairing meetings with senior administration advisors and cabinet members. Porter's now running the show sometimes because there's so much infighting and because the president himself is just so uninterested in the finer points. Fascinating. It's in the book Fear. By the way, you have heard me describe more than once taking my dog Bingo for a ride in the G7 action stroller. We posted pictures on social media about it. Bingo is that wiener dog that we've had for years whose back end hasn't been working for a while. He hasn't been able to walk. He was a rescue dog that came into our lives many years ago. And this morning, Brenda and I had to put him down. And that is,
oh, I'm sorry, John,
not an easy thing to do. And I only bring it up at the end of the show today because I don't want to dwell on it during the show. And I know that as much as we talk about my dogs on the radio, I ain't going to be talking about Bingo much anymore. Daisy, the dizzy, dappled dachshund, still lives in our house. And when Brenda and I came home today empty-handed, she looked at us a little bit like, what's wrong with this picture? Her little buddy is not going to be on the floor anymore.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I didn't know that until just 2 seconds ago. You shocked
me. I know. I'm sorry. I should have maybe given you a heads up, but I just don't want to talk about it at all. Sunday night, he was unable to sleep all night. This is a dog that is not in pain and has not missed a meal in the time we've owned him. You know, it's weird because in a way we did not have to put him down. If you massaged or palpated his back or stomach, he would not yelp in pain. I think a lot of us decide to finally put our pets down when the pain they're suffering from disease or old age is so unmanageable that you just have to do it. But this dog wasn't necessarily in pain all of the time, I don't think. But I know that he just couldn't live well. He was always panting. He would sometimes let out this yippy bark that almost sounded like a panic, and it was just him kind of being anxious and unaware of his surroundings. He didn't see well, he didn't hear great, and he just couldn't move. So his quality of life was not good. Think about how much your dog trots around the house during the day. You're over here, he goes over there. You're over there, he goes over there. He's got to pee, he goes out. He needs to get a drink of water, he gets a drink of water. My dog couldn't do any of that. We had to pick him up and first figure out what he needed and then take him to the appropriate spot. And we've been doing this for weeks and weeks and months. And every time we say, okay, we're at our wit's end, then he'd have a good day. That's what they do to you. Then they throw in a couple of good days into the mix and you think, oh, well, we can live with this. But Sunday night, Brenda didn't sleep. She was up all night with him trying to figure out what it is to make this dog content. And then I had a version of that Monday night, and we decided that it's not fair to him anymore. But here's the thing that keeps the dog alive maybe longer than the dog should be alive in this story, is that you feel guilty being so proactive. So that dog could be there right now. My dog could still be alive today. But we decided that this was too much. Now, were we doing that because we were being as sympathetic to him, or were we being more sympathetic to us? And that vacillation keeps the dog alive maybe longer than the dog should be. It's such a difficult thing to decide. So we took him in this morning. We had an appointment. That's a tough call to make. I mean, literally, I was struggling with the language I would use when I called the vet, and they get that call all the time. But I want to put my dog down was a very difficult sentence for me to utter on the phone. We made an appointment. We went in this morning, and the staff at the Blum Animal Hospital in Chicago on the north side could not have been better. They were so good, I felt bad for them, because they have to do this all the time. They come to know these pets, and they certainly see and feel our pain. And we had to do it once today, but it's a routine for them. And they seem genuinely sad and empathetic, and wasn't that nice? So we go into a little room, and the doctor says, we're going to give him a sedative, and that will calm him. And then we'll give him the other drug, and that will put him to sleep. And it will happen quickly, and they will pass without any pain or discomfort. And I'm like, yeah, we've all heard that story. I'm sure it's not as seamless as you make it sound. And I was not going to be in the room. I did not want to be there for that. Brenda absolutely was going to be in the room. She had to be there for that. And I wasn't going to let Brenda do it by herself. So now I'm in the room. And the doctor came in with our dog. He had taken him away previously just for a few minutes to put a little lead in his little arm. And then into that, they would insert the sedative and then the final solution. And when he inserted the sedative, he sort of stopped panting and just was resting. And then he took that and put in the other one, hit the plunger, the liquid went in. And I'm telling you, within 2 seconds, the dog passed. It was that quick and that painless. Here's to better euthanasia through pharmacology. I mean, what a miracle that was. I was so glad that the dog was able to pass so peacefully and so quickly. And then you just sat there and thought, wow, that just happened. And then what do? You walk out and everything feels a little bit different. So that was my day today. So when you hear fewer stories about pushing Bingo around Wrigley Field in his G7 action stroller with the mesh canopy, you'll know why. Our other dog, Daisy, like I said, she's kind of goofy. She's very skittish. She doesn't know or like me. And I don't know what life's going to be like in the old compound now. But that's where we were today. Now we got to take a break, don't we? By the way, it was inevitable, but one of the first texts that have come in after I told you about the passing of our dog today, Bingo, is, hey, John, I'm an ER nurse. I see people suffering every day. I wish people cared as much for people as you cared about your dog. You know, when we put the dog down and he passed so quickly and so quietly and so peacefully and so painlessly, you do wonder if, as a society, we are treating our fellow human beings with the same sort of speed and finality that you're able to afford your pets. I mean, really, you can't help but have that thought. I'm not going to go down the road. People are different than animals, et cetera, et cetera. But it can be done, and it's funny how you say, okay, it's time for that dog to end its suffering, and you make the decision for the dog. If a competent adult wants to make that same decision, we don't afford them that. And we kind of had that thought ourselves this morning after we put Bingo down. But thanks for your text. A lot of you are wishing us best, and we're fine. We're good. I appreciate it. He is a good dog, too. I called him the baked potato. I said, you are a baked potato. That's what my nickname was for Bingo, because when you pick him up, he was kind of like a big old baked potato. He didn't have much for arms and legs. He was a wiener dog. And he was always very warm. And if you had picked up a baked potato that could bark, that's what my dog was like a lot of the times. So thanks for your notes on that. It's 2:56. By the way, Kevin, I suppose you're going to be called in to talk about the Bears game last night, which was fun to watch. I presume you saw all of that.
Yes, I was there last night. What a crowd.
Why do you say what a crowd?
It just had felt like a while. It was under the lights. It was jam-packed at Soldier Field.
Don't they always sell out Bears games?
Yeah, they sell out. But, I mean, last year there was empty seats galore.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. That was a low point. Last night was a little different. It was Urlacher night. There was a little bit different of a buzz. Khalil Mack's first game at Soldier Field as a Bear.
How did he play last night?
He played very well again, John. He had a sack, another forced
strip.
Fumble.
Yeah.
He's on the track for Defensive Player of the Year, and I know it's only week two, but if he continues the way he's been playing through the first 2 weeks, he'll be in that conversation. He matters a ton.
Well, there's guys who will go a whole season and not have as many strips and interceptions and scores as he has in two games.
Right. Well, you know, he's got as many sacks as the entire Oakland Raiders team, who decided to trade him away. And
are they losing their minds out there? I was wondering about that.
Yeah, I mean, people are still talking about it, and Khalil Mack was asked about it after the game, and he just kind of brushed it aside. John Gruden says he kind of dances around it, but man, you traded away. We've said this a million times now, but it still almost feels like a dream for Bears fans that they were able to acquire a guy who's on a track for the Hall of Fame, John. That's how good this guy is. He's on the track to the Hall of Fame. He's only 27 in his prime, and you got him in his prime. Normally, you get a guy like this
on the
way
down.
Yeah, maybe when he's 30, last few years of his career, you maybe overpay a little bit. This is a guy smack dab in the middle of the prime of his career at one of the most important positions in all of football, a guy that can get to the quarterback.
Interesting story, too, because he wasn't highly recruited out of high school.
No,
he went to
not
a small, mid-sized college.
Yeah, he went playing the Mac, played at Buffalo, and now look what he's doing. Look what he's doing now.
How about them apples?
Yeah.
You'll talk more about that. Ro and Anna are right around the corner. Ro Khan and Anna DeVlantis are ready to roll. Hi, guys.
We are indeed.
Yes, we are.
We are indeed. I just heard you talking about Khalil Mack. I bought a Khalil Mack jersey at the game last night.
Oh.
It was the craziest thing. Went to the NFL Pro Shop right before. Hold on.
Oh, fun.
There we go.
But that set you back.
Yeah, really.
$100.
I'm sure those are discounted right now.
And they had them, and they were.
Get a really good deal on one of those.
It was crazy because they had like a separate like stack of them, and they kept replacing them. And people were like in line, jumping up, trying to find the right sizes and trying them on. Oh my God. It was like a feeding frenzy.
I bet.
To get these things.
One of the hottest selling in the
NFL. I don't want to, like, hooray, but it's two games. So hopefully he's healthy.
So much fun.
Hopefully he's productive. Hopefully this goes as well as, you know,
felt different last night, didn't it, Ro?
Yeah,
the atmosphere. It did.
Oh,
totally
different. And, you know, with Urlacher there last night and sort of handing over the reins, I ran into the Urlacher entourage on my way out, and I was wearing the Khalil Mack jersey, and Casey Urlacher, his brother, was like, "What are you wearing that for?" Like, because I wore the 52 and the 54, but I had a little Urlacher pin, and I pointed it out to them.
Okay.
What's the most embarrassing Bears jersey to still be wearing around these days?
Grossman.
Cutler.
Even Grossman more than Cutler, I think.
Grossman?
There are some random jerseys you see out there. People just hang on to them.
Who was the one quarterback we hated, the smug son of a gun that parked in the handicapped parking spot at training camp?
Oh,
and,
before Grossman.
Oh, my God, there's so many.
yes.
I'm sorry that we can't
put our
years.
Finger on it, but...
Yes, there were so many of them. But yeah, it was the guy who had first day of training camp parked in the handicapped spot. And you're like, what the...
Awkward.
Yeah, it was very awkward. Yes, yeah, so you could. That's. How do we forget his name? Was it not Kramer?
Cade McNown.
Cade McNown. Right. Yes, you do see McNown jerseys, but people listen. $100 is a big investment.
It is
on a piece of clothing that you're going to wear.
That's why I'm just saying. I know he's great, but $100. I would just wait until I got that jersey.
See, this is why the Mack one makes
you do not
sense
wear.
Because they just signed him to a 6-year deal. So you know, okay,
he's
for the next
be
five
around.
6 years, I got a jersey to wear.
Yeah, no.
That's good investment. Dollar cost averaging over 6 years. That's not bad.
And he was in on every play. And I got to tell you something, my buddy Rokan was playing pretty well last night, too.
He was doing you proud, your namesake.
So, yeah.
That's true. He's not even getting credit for some of the things. I mean, there's other guys that are getting credit or getting the sacks or the tackles. But he's just, everybody's contending with Mack, so then other people are making plays.
Yeah. That's a good point.
I know. It was a lot of fun. Although, I said to my buddy last night, I'm like, hey, the defense has to score to win this game. And they did, and they did. But that was the only way they won the game. It was the defense having to score. It's just like, you're back to 2006.
You are. Urlacher was there for a reason. It was like haunting.
Right. You're almost back to 1985 because let's face it, Jim McMahon's not going into the Hall of Fame. Right? How many quarterbacks who've won Super Bowls and had legacy teams like that are not in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
Here's one that won't go in. It's the offense has never been the key, but I'm a little disappointed in what I'm seeing so far on that side of the ball. But, you know, defense, Chicago, Grabowski,
Hey, Ro. Yeah. The best.
I'll see you later.
Okay, sorry.
Bye now.
Thanks.
Bye, John.
Yeah, bye, John.
Good chatting.
Nice to talk. I got to shut him up. I got to go.
Subtle the way he did that.
Your show hasn't started yet, Ro.
Hey, I'm not done, John.
He's got some more things to say.
All right.
Do the thing you do.
Okay.